Hello, knowledge seekers. In this episode of 20 Minute Books, we delve into The New Confessions of an Economic Hitman, a compelling insider's exploration of modern imperialism, authored by John Perkins. 12 years following the original revelations, Perkins returns to the fore with an updated account that captures the evolving landscape of global manipulation and control. Fueled by his first-hand experiences as a chief economist at Chas T. Maine, where he contributed his expertise to clients like the World Bank and the US Treasury, Perkins offers a unique perspective on how the United States has wielded debt as a weapon to exert influence over smaller nations. Drawing on his tenure, during which he self-identified as an economic hitman in service of American interests, Perkins unveils the intricate web of economic strategies devised to ensure dominance on the global stage. This narrative is not just a retelling, it's an expanded confession that includes insights into a new generation of economic hitmen who operate both abroad and within the United States, adapting to a world that has drastically changed since his initial exposé. This book is an essential read for history enthusiasts intrigued by the undercurrents of global politics, those fascinated by high-stakes international intrigue, and aspiring geopolitical strategists eager to understand the complexities of power and manipulation in the modern world. Join us as we unpack the dark intricacies of economic imperialism through the eyes of someone who once orchestrated it from the shadows. The New Confessions of an Economic Hitman, An Insider's Account of Imperialism in the Modern Age. Introduction. Unlock the secrets behind America's economic maneuvering. In the shadowy corridors of international politics and economics, a battle not of guns and missiles, but of currency and contracts, raged throughout the latter half of the 20th century. The warriors in this battle weren't soldiers, but rather economic hitmen, EHMs, a clandestine group of individuals tasked with the job of ensuring that American interests were maintained worldwide without ever needing to resort to overt military intervention. At the heart of this narrative is John Perkins, a man who once belonged to this elusive group of economic mercenaries. Having been recruited as a young, idealistic Peace Corps volunteer in Ecuador, Perkins was sculpted into an operative within the United States, furthering interests that were often at odds with those of the developing nations he dealt with. This tale is not just about his personal journey, but also about the evolution of the EHM role and its implications for global inequality and the stability of democratic institutions. As you dive into this astonishing story, you'll discover how EHMs have operated both outside and within the borders of the United States, manipulating economic systems for the benefit of a select few. You'll be introduced to the perilous concept of a death economy, an economic system that thrives on conflict and degradation rather than sustainable growth and equality. But this narrative isn't just an exploration of past transgressions. It's also a clarion call to action. As Perkins peels back the layers on the American corporatocracy, a consortium of corporations, banks, and governments that have harnessed economic power to steer policy and influence international relations, he also outlines steps ordinary people can take to resist and reform this system. In this revealing account, you'll gain insights into the techniques employed by EHMs to secure American hegemony in a world wary of overt military aggression, how these strategies have not only persisted, but have been increasingly applied within the United States, leading to ballooning inequality and societal strain. The concept of a death economy and how it endangers both global stability and the environment. Practical measures individuals can take to challenge the dominance of the corporatocracy and advocate for a fairer, more sustainable world order. Embark on a journey through the darker side of economic globalization and discover how you can play a part in steering our world towards a more equitable and sustainable future. Part 1. Debt, the invisible weapon of American influence. In the aftermath of World War II, the United States faced a pivotal challenge. how could it extend its global influence without resorting to the horrors of armed conflict? While the possibility of nuclear power loomed large as a deterrent, it wasn't a viable option for the nuanced art of diplomacy and long-term strategic alliances. The solution that emerged was both covert and cunning. Enter the economic hitmen, EHMs. The core idea is simple, yet profound. Economic hitmen employed debt as a tool to bend nations to America's will. Imagine a modern espionage thriller, but instead of the suave spy relying on gadgets and cars, our protagonist, the economic hitman, wields spreadsheets, economic forecasts, and the promise of loans. EHMs operated under the guise of helping nations develop, persuading them to accept substantial financial aid from organizations like the World Bank. However, the true motive lay in leveraging the resulting debt to secure those countries' allegiance to the United States, ensuring not only political fidelity, but also open doors for American corporations to their natural resources. Employing projections and reports that were, to put it mildly, optimistically inflated, EHMs convinced national leaders of the benefits of hefty loans. These promises of prosperity were often hollow, designed to ensnare countries in a web of debt. And when a leader hesitated or resisted aligning too closely with U.S. preferences, EHMs had darker tools at their disposal. The orchestration of coups, sponsorship of rigged elections, and even outright extortion. The story of Kermit Roosevelt, a CIA agent instrumental in the 1953 coup in Iran, exemplifies the high-stakes game the United States was playing. The intervention, aimed at regaining control over Iran's oil, was a success, but it exposed the U.S. to significant risks. The direct involvement of government operatives in such operations could lead to international scandals or worse. The ingenious, albeit morally questionable, solution was to insulate the government from potential fallout by outsourcing these delicate operations. Private sector companies became the new front for EHM activities, managing squads of economic operatives globally. This arrangement meant that if things went south, the blame would fall not on the CIA or the US military, but on these corporations. Thus, the role of the economic hitman emerged as a quintessential part of American foreign policy during the Cold War, operating in the shadows to shape the world according to American interests, without firing a single bullet. Part 2. From Peace Corps. Volunteer to Economic Hit Man, Perkins' Journey. Begins in the late 1960s, a young John Perkins was standing at a crossroads in his life. On the brink of graduating with a business administration degree from Boston University, Perkins was driven by a thirst for adventure and a desire to dodge the draft for the Vietnam War. Little did he know, his life was about to take a dramatic turn that would entwine his destiny with the covert operations of economic hitmen. Perkins' path to becoming an EHM was unconventional. Rejecting a straightforward job offer from the National Security Agency, he instead chose to venture into the heart of the Ecuadorian Amazon with the Peace Corps. It was there, amidst his dedication to understanding the local culture, economy, and the people's livelihoods, that fate intervened in the guise of Einar Greve, a vice president from Chasti Maine Inke, Maine for short, an international consulting firm. Here lies the turning point. Perkins began his EHM career under the auspices of a private consultancy. With Maine deeply involved in economic forecasting for the World Bank, Greve saw in Perkins an invaluable asset, someone with insider knowledge of Ecuador. Initially, Perkins's role was to substantiate the feasibility of investing billions in loans for hydroelectric projects in Ecuador and its neighboring countries, a task he undertook with diligence upon his return to Boston in 1971. However, as Perkins became entrenched in his role, a startling reality unfolded before him. Maine, ostensibly an engineering consultancy, didn't construct anything. Its true function was as an intermediary, facilitating deals that saddled nations with overwhelming debt under the guise of developmental loans, thereby making them pliable to the interests of the United States. In essence, Perkins's job was to craft reports that made these colossal loans appear not just viable, but beneficial, when in reality, they were chains of financial bondage. These reports played pivotal roles, convincing countries like Indonesia to embrace loans that necessitated hiring American companies for infrastructure and oil extraction projects, Maine among them. Though Maine wasn't directly funded by the U.S. government, the structure of these deals ensured its profitability. Perkins' most notable negotiation was in 1973 when he managed to secure unprecedented access to Saudi Arabia's vast oil reserves. This was accomplished by promising a comprehensive modernization of the Saudi infrastructure, an agreement that brought the U.S. immense strategic advantages. Throughout his tenure, Perkins was a witness and a participant in a world rife with coups, assassinations, and corruption, all facilitated by the manipulation of debt and economic forecasts. These experiences, though initially suppressed, eventually led to a profound moral reckoning. In 1980, burdened by the ethical implications of his work, Perkins exited Maine and the shadowy world of the EHMs. However, the practices he was part of would continue to evolve and expand, leaving a lasting impact on international relations and economic dynamics globally. Part 3: A Delicate Dance with Debt. Ecuador's President Walks a Tightrope. The political landscape of Ecuador in the early 2000s was tumultuous, to say the least. A revolving door of presidents, each replaced under dire circumstances favoring U.S. interests, marked an era of instability. However, 2006 seemed to signal a new dawn with the emergence of Rafael Correa, a candidate with a bold vision to reclaim Ecuador's sovereignty over its natural resources. His commitment to this cause, among others, resonated deeply with the electorate, propelling him to victory with a commanding 60% of the vote. Yet, amid the optimism, a formidable challenge loomed on the horizon. Ecuador was shackled by immense national debts, a legacy of previous administrations that would take years to overcome. For Correa, pursuing his transformative agenda meant navigating a minefield of fiscal constraints and making some unsettling compromises. National debts boxed in Ecuador's new president, forcing him into a corner of compromise. Aware of the intricate web of economic coercion spun by economic hitmen, EHMs, Correa found himself in a precarious position. His understanding of these manipulative practices, further informed by his reading of Confessions of an Economic Hitman, steeled him against their influences. Determined not to fold under pressure from the International Monetary Fund, which sought to auction off the Amazon's petroleum reserves to foreign oil companies, Correa stood his ground. These debts, after all, were remnants of agreements made under the watch of military dictators in league with the CIA and EHMs during the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Correa's defiance reached a peak when he attempted to renegotiate national oil contracts, boldly asserting Ecuador's ownership over its resources. This move triggered a critical response from EHMs, who, upon failing to sway his decision, orchestrated attempts to unseat him, mirroring the fate of his predecessors. In 2010, a coup attempt by the Ecuadorian police, with suspected backing from the CIA, put Correa's resolve to the test. Despite military support ensuring his survival, the incident underscored the fragile balance he had to maintain. Too aggressive a stance could make him another casualty in the long line of deposed leaders, too passive, and his ambitious goals would remain unattainable. In the ensuing years, Correa's administration made a controversial decision to auction off portions of the oil-rich Amazon rainforest, a move aimed at mollifying the EHMs and mitigating the nation's debt. This action sparked widespread protests from indigenous communities, drawing significant media attention. The resulting public relations fiasco deterred U.S. companies from participating in the bids, highlighting the complex interplay of international influence, sovereign policy, and grassroots activism. Correa's tenure illustrates the intricate dynamics at play when a nation seeks to assert its autonomy while grappling with the tangible constraints of inherited debts. It's a tale of strategic compromise, bold resistance, and the relentless pursuit of national self-determination amid the global forces that shape our world. Part 4. Scandal. Spotlight. FIFA's fall masks the greater financial conspiracy. In the intricate webs woven by corporatocracy, where corporations, banks, and governments entangle in a dance of power and corruption, the spotlight often misses the deeper, darker currents shaping our world. This complex system, though American in its origins, has cast its shadow across the globe, manipulating from the murky background with little public scrutiny. However, in 2015, a scandal erupted that seemed to drag these concealed machinations into the glaring light, albeit partially. The epicenter of this exposure was none other than FIFA, the global overseer of soccer, now accused by the U.S. Justice Department of engaging in widespread corruption. The charges painted a sordid picture of bribes, money laundering, and fraud, echoing the very tactics employed by economic hitmen to manipulate economic and political outcomes internationally. To the public, the unfolding drama of FIFA's downfall appeared as a significant triumph in the battle against corruption. FIFA's officials, faced with irrefutable evidence, conceded to their misdemeanors, resulting in the forfeiture of millions of dollars. Yet this narrative, while captivating, inadvertently served as a smokescreen for a conspiracy of a much grander scale. The heart of the matter is this: the 2015 FIFA corruption scandal was but a distraction from a vast banking conspiracy that remained shrouded in darkness. This shadowy plot had its roots back in 2007 when major banking institutions, including Barclays, Citigroup, JP Morgan Chase, the Royal Bank of Scotland, and UBS of Switzerland, clandestinely formed a coalition they audaciously named the Cartel. Their agenda was unapologetically self-serving, to line their pockets through the deliberate manipulation of the foreign exchange market, or Forex. Utilizing secret communication channels like emails and chat rooms, ominously dubbed the Mafia, these financial titans orchestrated currency riggings with precision and impunity. Their scheme persisted until 2014, when their covert operations were finally unveiled. The legal repercussions were severe on paper, nearly $6 billion in fines. However, for institutions whose assets were counted in the hundreds of billions, this penalty was but a negligible inconvenience. Arrests were conspicuously absent. The question then arises: how did the FIFA scandal, despite its relatively lesser financial impact, captivate public and media attention, overshadowing the colossal malfeasances of the Forex manipulation? The spectacle of international sports, with its built-in audience and narrative allure, undoubtedly played a part. Yet, the author suggests a more intricate explanation lies beneath the surface: the protective veil of corporatocracy. Banks, as integral components of this global power structure, benefit from their ability to sway regulatory and legislative bodies through lobbying and financial influence. Their entrenchment within the corporatocracy affords them a level of immunity, ensuring that regulatory crackdowns remain lenient and that the most severe consequences are always averted. In contrast, FIFA, despite its global stature, lacks the same tentacles into the political and financial institutions that could have shielded it from the full force of Justice Department prosecution. Thus, when both scandals emerged almost simultaneously, it was no coincidence which story captured the world's attention. The bankers behind the Forex scam quietly retreated into the shadows, their freedom intact, while FIFA officials faced public indictment. This stark dissonance between the outcomes underscores not just the power of corporatocracy, but its capacity to shape narratives and deflect scrutiny from its most egregious exploitations. Part 5. How Corporate EHMs Redraw the Map of American Wealth and Power. The unfolding narrative of economic hitmen, EHMs, in the 21st century reveals a complex, shadowy expansion of their roles far beyond the geopolitical manipulations of the past. Today, they are not merely agents of international intrigue, but also pivotal figures within the corporate landscapes of the United States, serving the interests of large banks and corporations. These modern EHMs are at the heart of exacerbating global and domestic inequality, wielding their influence to further enrich the already wealthy, while the majority are left to contend with a dwindling share of the economic pie. A striking illustration of this disparity is brought to light in a 2014 report by Oxfam, which highlighted a grim reality. Just 1% of the global population controls nearly half of the world's wealth. Moreover, 70% of the global populace lives in countries where the chasm between the rich and the poor has only widened over the last three decades, with the United States standing as a prominent example of this trend. EHMs are now integral operatives within the machinery of large banks and corporations across the United States. In the case of Boeing, a name synonymous with aviation, but also a heavyweight in the defense sector, EHMs of a particular variety called site location consultants play a critical role. These consultants engage in high-stakes negotiations with communities and governments, leveraging the promise of jobs and economic investment to extract substantial tax breaks and regulatory concessions. The threat is clear: accede to our demands, or we'll relocate our operations, taking wealth and employment opportunities elsewhere. These consultants, rewarded with up to 30% of the subsidies they secure, represent a new evolution of the EHM, one that operates in the domestic arena with as much impact as their international counterparts. This strategy of leveraging corporate influence for financial gain is not limited to Boeing. A study by Good Jobs First revealed that between 2000 and 2015, the U.S. government awarded subsidies of $60 million or more to 298 corporations, including financial behemoths like Goldman Sachs and agrochemical giants like Monsanto. Meanwhile, ExxonMobil, despite clocking a profit of $41 billion in 2011, benefited from $119 million in state subsidies. The case of Walmart underlines the effectiveness of EHM strategies in maximizing corporate profits while minimizing contributions to public coffers. According to Americans for Tax Fairness, Walmart has expertly navigated the global tax landscape to shield upwards of $76 billion in assets across 15 offshore tax havens. This strategic maneuvering, emblematic of EHM operations, allows Walmart to sidestep billions in U.S. taxes, all while its employees draw upon an annual $6 billion in government support due to insufficient wages. The Walton family, Walmart's proprietors, rank among the world's wealthiest individuals. Yet their reliance on EHM tactics underscores a relentless pursuit of wealth accumulation that often comes at the expense of societal well-being and economic fairness. This evolution of EHMs within the United States paints a stark picture of a nation where corporate and financial elite deploy sophisticated methods to consolidate power and wealth, deepening inequalities and challenging the foundational principles of democracy and equitable economic development. Part 6: China's rise as a global economic powerhouse with its own EHMs. The dynamics of global power and economic influence are complex and ever-evolving, with the United States long seen as the primary architect of using economic hitmen, EHMs, to extend its reach. Yet it's essential to recognize that this strategy is not exclusive to the U.S. Over the past few decades, another contender has emerged on the scene, adeptly deploying its version of EHMs and reshaping the international landscape of debt, power, and resource allocation: China. This shift became notably apparent in the case of Ecuador. After President Rafael Correa opted out of repaying the daunting debts incurred by his predecessors, a move that led to a nosedive in the nation's credit rating, China stepped in as the lender of last resort. With a generous loan of $2 billion, China not only salvaged Ecuador's financial standing, but also subtly ensnared it within its sphere of influence. By 2015, a staggering 55% of Ecuador's oil exports were bound for China, marking a significant pivot away from its traditional ties with the United States. The essential insight is this: China has meticulously developed its cadre of EHMs. Taking cues from the playbook of the U.S. since the 1990s, China has embraced similar strategies characterized by leveraging debt and inducing dependence to bolster its wealth and clout on the global stage. But China's approach exhibits certain nuances. For instance, rather than pressing for free trade agreements, it assures partner countries of long-term industrial commitments. Moreover, the loans it extends tend to eschew the stringent conditionalities often associated with those from institutions like the World Bank. Despite these refinements, the underlying methodology remains unchanged, exploiting the vulnerabilities of developing nations to consolidate capital and influence. This reality has sparked a discourse within the U.S. centered on the dual themes of fear and competition, with calls to counter China's growing presence and its environmental ramifications receiving significant attention. However, such framing overlooks the intricate entanglement of U.S.-China relations, particularly in the context of global commerce and environmental degradation. Indeed, much of the pollution attributed to China stems from manufacturing goods destined for American consumers. This connection underscores a broader reality. The insatiable consumer appetite of the American populace, representing a mere 5% of the global population, accounts for a quarter of the world's resource consumption. China, representing a significantly larger slice of the global demographic, is seen as trying to replicate this unsustainable model. The emergence of other nations following suit only amplifies the urgency for a collective reevaluation of consumption patterns and the overarching economic model. Rather than framing the discourse in terms of how to stop China, a more productive and forward-thinking approach would focus on fostering a global paradigm shift towards sustainability and equitable resource use. In this context, the challenge transcends national borders and ideological divides, calling for a unified effort to reimagine and realign our economic and environmental priorities. Part 7: Shifting Gears, From a Death Economy to a Life Economy. In the sprawling web of global economics, the practices employed by economic hitmen, ranging from intimidation and bribery to outright deception, have crystallized into a deeply entrenched system. This system, dubbed the death economy by the author, predicates itself on a relentless cycle of fear, debt, and exploitation, pushing individuals and entire nations into decisions that ravage both the environment and human dignity. Countries trapped in this vortex, like Ecuador and Iran, find themselves stripping their natural riches and compromising their ecological and social integrity, all under the looming threat of economic retribution or worse. This paradigm, while lucrative for a select few, spells disaster on a global scale, fundamentally challenging the narrative that economic growth inherently translates to collective well-being. The transition from the death economy requires a radical realignment of our collective mindset. Embracing a life economy strikes at the heart of this imperative change. Contrary to the death economy's foundation of coercion and perpetual indebtedness, the life economy advocates for environmental stewardship, self-sufficiency, sustainable energy solutions, and a banking system rooted in community rather than exploitation. The onus to catalyze this transformation does not exclusively rest on the shoulders of governments and corporations. Instead, it beckons each individual to actively participate in forging a path towards equity and sustainability. Taking practical steps towards this goal involves rethinking our consumption habits and financial practices. Opt for minimalism rather than excess, support local businesses, and channel your investments into ventures that prioritize ethical governance and environmental preservation. Communication with these entities is crucial. Make your preferences and demands for responsible conduct known. Finding a cause that resonates with your beliefs can amplify your impact. Whether it's advocating for corporate accountability, contributing to humanitarian efforts, or rallying for systemic reforms, your engagement can serve as a catalyst for profound change. In the realm of politics, combating the influence of lobbyists through campaign finance reform and endorsing candidates committed to meaningful climate action can tackle systemic issues at their root. Lastly, staying informed and vocally opposing injustice wherever it arises is essential. By understanding the intricacies of global and local issues, we can form a collective, informed voice against the mechanisms of the death economy. The journey from a death economy to a life economy is ambitious and fraught with challenges. Yet, by shifting our collective mindset and actively participating in the creation of sustainable, equitable alternatives, we can initiate a profound and necessary transformation of our world. This journey begins with each of us, guided by the conviction that a better, more just future is not only possible but imperative. Part 8. Charting a Course Towards a Life Economy, a Call to Business Leaders. In an era where the shadow of the death economy looms large, the role of business leaders and entrepreneurs in spearheading a seismic shift towards sustainability and ethical practices has never been more critical. Whether you're at the helm of a flourishing enterprise or a customer with a vested interest in ethical business practices, the power to foster positive change and transition towards a life economy rests in your hands. Embrace the mission to transform the current death economy into a thriving life economy. The first step on this journey is a deep introspection of your company's core values and objectives. Embed these ideals into your mission statement and marketing endeavors, making a public declaration of your commitment to environmental conservation, social equity, and justice. Communicate transparently with investors, executives, and employees about the significance of these values and the role they play in safeguarding the company's future. However, a vision without action is merely a dream. It's imperative to align your business operations with these proclaimed values. This encompasses sourcing materials responsibly, favoring recycling and suppliers who uphold strict environmental and ethical standards. Transparency regarding the origin of your resources is crucial, ensuring that every stakeholder understands and supports your commitment. Furthermore, take a stand against wage disparity. Adopting a compensation structure that promotes equity, such as capping the disparity between the highest and lowest salaries within your organization, ensures that all employees receive a fair, living wage. This approach not only fosters a sense of community and mutual respect among your workforce, but also sets a powerful precedent for ethical business practices. Equally important is the cultivation of diversity and inclusivity within your organization. This principle should permeate every facet of your company, from hiring practices and supplier selections to partnerships. Avoiding the pitfalls of a monocultural framework enriches your company's perspective, innovation, and adaptability, laying a strong foundation for long-term success. Embarking on the path towards a life economy is no small endeavor and might appear daunting at first glance. Initiating change, however incremental, sets the stage for a broader transformation. As you lead by example, fostering an environment rooted in ethical and sustainable practices, you encourage others to join this vital movement. Together, through collective action and unwavering commitment to our shared values, we can steer the global economy away from the precipice of destruction and towards a future where prosperity is measured not merely by financial gain, but by the well-being of our planet and all its inhabitants. Let this be the legacy we choose to create: a world anchored in the principles of a life economy. Part 9. Confronting the Shadows. A Journey Beyond Fear and Debt. In a world ever teetering on the edge of economic and ecological precipices, a profound truth echoes through the corridors of power and into the heart of our global community. The mechanisms driving our current economic system thrive on two deeply entrenched pillars: fear and debt. This poignant observation, encapsulated in the stark words from The New Confessions of an Economic Hitman, serves as a clarion call for introspection and action. Fear and debt drive this system. We are hammered with messages that terrify us into believing that we must pay any price, assume any debt, to stop the enemies who, we are told, lurk at our doorsteps. These words lay bare the machinery of manipulation that fuels the death economy, a system where decisions are dictated not by the collective welfare of humanity or the planet, but by the specter of fabricated threats and the shackles of financial indebtedness. It reveals a narrative carefully crafted to coerce nations and individuals into a cycle of endless consumption, unsustainable growth, and the exploitation of natural resources, all under the guise of security and prosperity. However, hidden within this stark portrayal is also a message of empowerment and hope. The very recognition of fear and debt as instruments of control is the first step toward dismantling their power. By challenging the narratives that have been woven around us and questioning the true cost of security that comes at the expense of our planet's health and our social fabric, we begin to pave a new path. This journey requires courage, the courage to envision an economy that serves not just the interests of a wealthy few, but promotes the well-being of all communities and the planet we share. A life economy, as it were, built on principles of sustainability, equity, and respect for natural limits. Breaking free from the chains of fear and debt is not merely an economic or environmental imperative, but a moral one. It calls for a collective awakening to the interconnectedness of our actions and their impact on the world stage. It urges businesses, governments, and individuals to redefine success, not by the accumulation of wealth and power, but by the health of our communities and the stewardship of our natural world. In echoing the words that highlight the foundations of fear and debt upon which our current system stands, we are also reminded of our power to reshape this reality. The path forward is illuminated by the choices we make today. Choices that can either perpetuate a cycle of exploitation and disparity or foster a future where prosperity is measured by the richness of our relationships with each other and with the earth. As we stand at this critical juncture, let us choose to build a legacy of resilience and hope, casting aside the shadowy specters of fear and debt, and stepping boldly into the light of a life economy. Final summary. In the aftermath of World War II, the United States embarked on a covert mission to extend its ideological and economic influence across the globe, giving rise to the era of economic hitmen, EHMs. These individuals, operating under the guise of development and progress, ensnared nations in a web of debt, exploiting this leverage to sway policy decisions in favor of American interests. As time evolved, the strategies employed by EHMs found new ground within the United States itself, manifesting through the intricate networks of private banking, corporate lobbying, and political manipulation. The tentacles of these practices have since sprawled beyond American borders, with nations like China adopting similar tactics to cement their global standing. The pivotal message here is clear. A profound shift is necessary to overturn the prevailing currents of exploitation and environmental disregard, a transition towards what is envisioned as a life economy. This new paradigm champions the well-being of communities and the holistic health of our planet over the insatiable appetites of corporate greed and wealth accumulation. At its core, the journey from a death economy, a system predicated on fear, debt, and environmental sacrilege, to a life economy is one of collective awakening and action. It calls for an earnest reevaluation of our values and a steadfast commitment to sustainable practices that honor the intricate balance of our natural world. This vision encompasses not only a departure from the destructive cycles of debt and exploitation, but also an embracement of renewable energy, ethical consumption, and equitable economic structures that uplift all members of society. Business leaders and entrepreneurs are positioned at the forefront of this transformative movement, with the capacity to lead by example and realign their operations with the ethics of a life economy. Transparency, equity, and environmental stewardship must be woven into the fabric of their mission, transcending mere rhetoric into tangible practices that reverberate across their spheres of influence. Equally, consumers wield immense power in shaping the trajectory towards a life economy. Through mindful consumption, responsible investment, and advocacy for systemic change, individuals can catalyze a shift in corporate behaviors and governmental policies, steering society towards a path of sustainability and justice. In essence, the transition towards a life economy is not just an economic imperative, but a moral and ecological one. It represents a collective journey towards redefining prosperity, where success is measured by the richness of our natural environment and the health and happiness of communities worldwide. It is a call to action for each of us to contribute towards a future where the economy serves not the interests of the few, but the well-being of all. One where we build not just a bridge to a better world, but a foundation for generations to come. Thank you for joining me today on this journey of learning and discovery as we explored the insights of another thought-provoking book in our growing library of knowledge. If you've enjoyed our time together, please take a moment to follow our podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and share 20-minute books with other knowledge seekers. Your support truly means a lot. Don't forget to join me again in the next episode, where we will delve into another enriching book. Until then, happy reading and happy listening.